This ceremony was officiated by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at cmm.org. Thanks for listening.
So this morning we're doing Shosan, or Dharma Encounter, and this is a tradition that is part of the Zen tradition, going back a long time, but in a sort of broader way, it goes back all the way to the Buddha. It's an opportunity to engage the teachings together publicly. There are various forms of teaching in our training. There's teisho, or formal talks that a teacher offers, directly pointing to the Dharma to awaken the mind. There's face-to-face teaching, which happens privately and confidentially between the student and teacher, so in which the student takes up their practice in the Dharma again to awaken and liberate their suffering. That happens out of view, so no one sees that. This is a kind of public merging of teisho and face-to-face, where I'll offer some introductory words and then invite the Sangha to come forth and offer their understanding or ask a question. It gives us a way to engage the teachings together to try and bring them out. And so in that way, it's very akin to what's happened for centuries, where students would encounter teachers inside and outside of monasteries and inquire into the Dharma and try to bring illumination to their lives. What I wanted to focus on this morning, our training period this fall is centered around Buddha ancestors. And so I wanted to look at that in some particular ways this morning. I'd also want to acknowledge that, this week there have been these confirmation hearings and the testimony by Christine Blasey Ford, and many of us here in this room have been in session all week, and so we don't know what's been going on this week, at least. And some of you joined on Thursday, so you brought in Thursday's portion of it, and others of you joined on Friday, and so you brought in Thursday and Friday's portion of it. And some of you are just arriving this morning, and so you may have gotten the full Monty. We are, those of us who are here, though, unless you snuck out between breakfast crew and caretaking. but I just wanted to acknowledge that this is happening. So in the sense that's very much in the room and in us, because it's in our consciousness and in our time. And it's both very much about what's happening right now in terms of these hearings and all that the import and the impact of that and the coming forth of these allegations of sexual abuse, brought forward by someone who has the potential to wield tremendous power over our lives. But it's also happening within the context of something that's much larger, both in the moment of our history in our country and in the world, but also in something that has, of course, been happening for millennia. And so perhaps we're living in an age of revolution, of Me Too, of Black Lives Matter, of questioning power and how it's been wielded and by whom. And I think of the Metta Sutta, the Loving Kindness Sutra, which speaks of the need to bring loving kindness to those who are weak or strong, those who are great or mighty, medium, small, those who are seen and unseen, those who are living near and far away, those born and yet to be born. How prescient the Buddha was, speaking so profoundly to our time, where we need to be thinking about those yet to be born, where we need to really be seen, those of us who have spent lives or centuries not seeing many, and in that way not seeing ourselves. And so perhaps we're witnessing and part of a great display of courage and turning, shifting, as truth tellers come forward and speak their truth and face the onslaught of defensiveness and attachments and the fear behind those attachments and defensiveness. I think of Sarah Grimke's comment, the 19th century white abolitionist, who said, "I ask no favors for my sex. I surrender not our claim to equality. All I ask of our brethren is that they take their feet off of our necks." Not asking for anything special, just take your feet off of my neck, so that we can stand upright on the ground which God designed us to occupy. And I think also of our age is, one way I think of it is an age of desecration, in which we, through our creating of false boundaries and manufacturing of fear and anger, and our vivid displays, transparent displays of deception, blame, 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 of a seemingly diminishing faith in our basic constitution as moral beings and the responsibility that comes along with that. Little understanding or concern, perhaps, for the relationship between a person's character and what their actions will be. So to bring out the old falsehood that the ends justify the means. And all of this, of course, is a result of, from a Buddhist perspective, of profoundly false views, of profound attachments, of profound fear and greed and anger and delusion. And it fosters a lack of empathy, a lack of contact, a lack of clear seeing. It fosters harsh judgment and contempt and aggression and then destruction. We destroy what we do not regard, even if it's just in our lack of regard. That itself is an act of destruction. And so what I want to focus on today is not, in a sense, well, another false boundary. I was going to say not the world. Of all of these turnings and activities and details that are essential and that we need to be aware of and act within, but to look at, as Dharma practitioners, where do we find our ground? Seeing all things, being devoted and committed to seeing things clearly, inside and outside, to dissolving those boundaries, to closing the gap so that we live a life of intimate contact. And that, as I spoke of yesterday, that this arises from and is encouraged and supported and strengthened by our mutual respect, reverence, love, our recognition of the fact that all things are sacred. When the Buddha said, "Between heaven and earth, I alone am the honored one," that was like a great declaration. He wasn't talking about I, the personal one, I, my personal self, I being all beings, all things, at this moment, in the honored one, in the sacred one, in the one that is both fully endowed with respect and reverence and worthy of this. And that when we don't see that, we act out of not seeing that, and we desecrate. We make ugly, in a sense, what is beautiful. We take apart what is whole. And so in looking at this teaching of Master Dogen's, that to actualize Buddha ancestors means to bring them forth and look at them in veneration. What does that mean? And yesterday I spoke about some of the dangers of that, right? Of self-righteousness, of attachments, you know, placing things outside of ourselves and revering them in a way that creates just more objects, more false gods, false selves, really. And that really the altar in the Zendo, in every sacred place, because in every sacred place there is an altar, that the altar is your mind. The fundamental altar is your mind. And when that altar is established, then the world is seen in turn. When it's not, it's seen in turn. And we've made many altars, of course, as human beings. Samsara is just a way of producing all kinds of altars in the sense, a kind of desecration of an altar, in the sense that we bring our reverence, which is a false reverence. We bring our attachments and our false views to wealth and power and fame and exploitation, exploitative sexuality, to domination, to division, to exceptionalism, to nationalism, to tribalism, to racism, sexism, classism, all the ways we devise to separate and to have and take away power. And so what I want to concentrate on today is within this house that is burning, the Buddha said 2,500 years ago. And in that he meant you and me. Your mind is the house that's burning. This body, this place, this location in time is the house that's burning. Burning in our senses as we perceive things wrongly. Burning in our hands and feet as we respond to them in a way that creates suffering. Within this, where do you find your ground, O practitioners of the Dharma? You know, it's like at home when things get a little hectic, or at work when things are moving too fast, and how quickly we practitioners of the Buddha Dharma, we takers of vows, we aspirers to great compassion and wisdom, forget. We forget we have a practice. We forget we have Dharma. We forget what we actually know. We forget what we have actually seen to be true. And in that way, in those moments, you know, having turned away from that, we turn towards something else. And so it's so easy to spin and spin, and so we may spin into numbness, right? Into just retreat. Or we may spin into just a continual obsessive narrative that is not, that has ceased to be constructive, that has ceased to provide us with the information we need in order to be responsible people of a community, of a large community, of a country. It's not doing that anymore. It's not inspiring us, it's not moving us, it's not clarifying, it's actually doing quite the opposite. And so these extremes, you know, that we see in so many aspects of our practice, we can see in such moments. And so as practitioners of the Dharma, what do we take refuge in? In taking refuge, the fascicle by Master Dogen, he said, the Buddha clearly taught that all sentient beings should not take refuge in mountain deities, demon spirits, and so on, or in shrines of those who follow false paths. With their fears, their suffering, that's what we end up following. It is not possible to be liberated from various sufferings by taking refuge in these. People follow the crooked teachings of those who follow false ways, who follow the ways of cows, deer, and demons. Those who practice not speaking, those who practice not hearing, Those who follow dogs, chickens, peacocks, or those who put ash on their bodies, grow long hair, sacrifice sheep on the seasonal rites after chanting mantras, worship the fire in the fourth month, or bow to the wind on the seventh day. I was thinking, I guess it's always been a spiritual supermarket. I thought that was a modern thing. So he's not being clever. He's talking about specific ways that there were practices of people who took on the life of a dog, living their life on all fours, barking, right? Nosing their way through garbage. All of these different ways that people, perhaps sincerely, were trying to understand how to live this life, but in ways that were not going to lead them to true liberation. Dogen says that in taking refuge, that there's a mutual affinity and interaction, a mutual affinity with Buddha, with Dharma, with Sangha, a mutual affinity with a true path, with reality. An affinity with reality. And then interaction. Interaction. That to take refuge means to rely upon. Dogen says that when we take refuge, that we nurture ourselves in every realm. In other words, wherever you go, whatever you encounter, whoever you meet, you nurture yourself. What does that mean? Nurture what in yourself? And so in this time, because this is our time, and whether we're talking about what's going on politically or in any particular arena, nationally, globally, whether we're talking about what's going on in our particular lives, the challenges that we face, in which we could very easily or perhaps are in moments turning towards numbness, and retreat, or turning. What do you take refuge in? How do you take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha? What is Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha in the presence of today? Where do you find your strength? What is it that nurtures you? What are you developing finding in your mutual affinity so that you can interact? So what I really want to focus on is not so much, you know, how are we going to solve or address various problems, as important as that is, but what do we bring to that? Where are we coming from in stepping forward? What is our ground? What do we take refuge in? What is the source of our strength? And so Seishin will begin as the chief disciple, and then any of you who are engaged in the Ango are invited and encouraged to come up. And please, as you come up, just, you know, let it mix it up in terms of men and women, in terms of young and old, in terms of people who may not have done Dharma encounter before. So those of you, be swift of foot and get online. And then we'll begin. The first, the chief disciple and the last person will do three bows. Everybody else just does one. And Shosan means Dharma encounter. So Shosan Chi is the teacher of the Dharma encounter.
Shosan Chi. The first thing that I need to do to be with,
Hang on. We got power here?
It should be on.
We can begin every public event this way. Just so you know. Nothing's wrong. This is just how.
So, in order to be with the injustice, and see it, truly see it, that is done to women or people of color or anybody who gets, in a way, not acknowledged in their sacredness. I need to see where I do this myself. And that looks like a deep introspection.
Why do you need to see what you don't see yourself? What do you mean by that?
Only then, well, if I do what they do, how can I change anything?
Who's they here?
People that abuse.
If you yourself are oppressing.
An abuser, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and then, then comes that hard next step of not completely like judging the other so much, the abuser, that like they too have that sacredness, mm-hmm. and it's just they are blind to it.
Mm. Yeah, so seeing the blindness within ourselves, the oppressor mm-hmm. within ourselves, the hater within ourselves. And so, as you say, not judging too much, right? I mean, sometimes Buddhists, I mean, I hear this all the time, where somebody will come in and say something, which is, you know, a judgment. And they'll say, I'm not judging. But they are, right? And it's as though, you know, it's a misunderstanding of the teachings. You know, we have to be able to discriminate. We have to, otherwise, we're completely lost, right? And so we have to be able to discern right from wrong, good from bad, oppressor from oppressed, blind from seeing. But it's not judging too much, which means not in a way that becomes a perpetuation of the very thing that we're trying to interrupt. And so how does your practice, what do you take refuge in that helps you to meet that within another and within yourself that actually leads to something beneficial?
Well, first I have to come from this place of, well, humility.
For a place
humility.
Of humility.
Like,
humility.
To, in a way, get to their level of understanding why is that happening for them? Like, mm-hmm. what is it that is deluding? Like, where, in a way, where did they get hurt? Mm-hmm. Where did they got hurt?
Yeah, but I think, you know, if we, because we can't know everyone's story, but if we really do that within ourselves, the essential part of that we will know. You will know. Right? And so then having compassion and holding accountable is as important for you towards yourself as it is important that we offer that to others. Both are important, right? Sometimes we rush too quickly past judgment, past accountability, past no, stop, this must stop, right? To want to just identify with the pain in somebody else and why they're doing what they're doing, which is part of it. But the first pure precept is stop the harm. So may your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
So, you know, I was at this anti-racism training for the last 2 days, and while I was there, I received a teaching that I have been receiving seemingly everywhere lately, and we were broken up into groups and sent off and given an exercise to do together as a group and come back and report to the full group. And so the group that I was in came back first and was reporting first, and we hung up our little charts and, you know, started talking about blah, 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 blah. And the trainer said, so did you all introduce yourselves to each other? Mm-hmm. And we had not. Mm-hmm. We were like, I was like, we have a task to do. We need to get this done. Okay, where do we start? Da, 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 da.
Okay, and so for the sake of those of us who don't know the importance of this, help us.
Well, I think so much of what this workshop was, this training was pointing to in all these different, we spent, there were 70 people at this training, twice as many as there normally are, and we spent the first 2.5 hours of the training going around the room, all 70 people, mm-hmm. my name is, this mm-hmm. is what I do, and this is why it's important to me. Mm-hmm. And I could feel myself like looking at my watch, like I'm somehow, like they don't know what they're doing. They've been doing this for 40 years. You know, it's like, this is too much time. I can't, this is eating into the other stuff. We're good. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the whole thing, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Is like, you're a person in front of me. Like, do I actually see that? Mm-hmm. I'm a person in here. Mm-hmm. Am I feeling that? Mm-hmm. In my day, as I go about my business, getting things done very efficiently,
right.
You know? And so, I mean, I feel like it's taking a really long time to kind of make this connection mm-hmm. gel inside of my body and mind that, like, this isn't something that I do just to other people. Mm-hmm. I do this to myself.
Right.
Like, I'm not even here. I'm not important. My needs aren't important because I have things I need to do.
Right. Yeah, thank you for that. I brought forth a line from the poem of the Gateless Gate, better to see the face than to hear the name. So, you know, I just want in case, because she spoke softly, to invoke what Sachin said about humility. How important is that? Our humility in all of these moments. Thank you.
Thank you for your teaching.
So just to echo, if you can hang on just a minute, Achang, just to echo or bring forth what Master Dogen has been teaching us at Sangho, that relates to what Zuiko just said, in terms of bringing forth the ancestors. And ancestors here means the Buddha ancestors, ancestors who came to life within Buddha Dharma. But because what those ancestors came to life to is within each one of us and within each and every person. Buddha ancestors really means every being. And because every living and inanimate thing also possesses this self nature, it means everything. In that sense, everything is a living thing. And he says, it is taking up those who have maintained the face and eye of Buddha ancestors, formally bowing and meeting them. And so I think hearing what stories we go told about what is it to formally bow to and meet oneself and another.
Shosanji, I just bow to you, and I hope I'm still bowing. Because when I'm bowing, it's a reminder, it's a strike for me to do my practice.
Is it apart from doing your practice?
No, just together. But sometimes our mind just separate mm-hmm. us, you know, where we are,
mm-hmm.
who I am,
mm-hmm.
who you are.
Yeah.
And so in this bowing, there's a huge humanity that I humble myself, that I am in this. You are me. I am you. You, you, you. And here, here, there. And we are one body, one essence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the essence of respect and veneration. And so in Buddhism, there are ways that the teachings help us to try and understand this. How is it true what you say? And so we can look at, well, you have within you the genes of your parents and the genes of their parents. And so it begins to go exponentially, right? And so very quickly it becomes very large. And that as you go back, 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 you eventually arrive at our first mother, our first father, right? And so we can understand it that way. And that's helpful, right? We can also look at any piece of phenomena, anything, a tree, a piece of paper, right, a microphone, and see in it the world. But that's, while that's helpful, it's also conceptual. And so it can get our attention, it can slow us down, it can cause us to reflect and think about things more carefully. But when we practice and we go directly to that experience of one essence, it's like having ridden these waves our whole life, having been a wave our whole life, and being, you know, embedded in our waveness, looking out and seeing the other waves, you know, comparing, I'm higher than you, right? But you're gaining on me, right? And so, but then eventually through practice, you know, we reclaim the ocean. And then we see. May your life go well.
Thank you.
So Sanchi, I'm glad you used the word respect, because I have a real problem with respect. In our culture, respect is primarily focused on, I think of the military and money. Mm-hmm. I don't think of the environment. Mm-hmm. I don't think of caretaking love. And so every time I hear respect, it isn't what you intend.
So as a practitioner, what can you do about that?
Respect myself.
Reclaim that. Reclaim that word as a word of great power. Right? In other words, bring it, its essential meaning into being. How do you do that? What is respect?
Respect. It is asking a question.
Well, but before you can ask a question, like asking a question to me, or if I ask you a question, what has to precede the question?
Attention.
Think about what Zuiko just talked about a moment ago.
I have to see.
Exactly. I have to see you. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
I was going to wait till the end to say this, but now is better. You know, in talking about this and bringing this out, that can have a great value and be important. The danger is that it's just that. We have this time, we talk about it, maybe we're inspired, maybe we're irritated. But when we leave it. It's over. It's done. And so, you know, at this conference last week, with this collection of 70 Buddhist teachers, we were talking all about race and gender bias work, anti-race, racism and anti-sexism work. And there was a very sincere, calling out to want to really engage this work within, you know, people's respective Dharma communities and centers. And some people are engaging in this, as we are, and others have not yet, you know, really taken that up, but are you know, inspired to do so and are working towards that. And I leaned over to somebody who was sitting next to me, a friend who I know does a lot of this work within his own community, and I said, you know, every time I hear people say, yeah, I really want to do this, I think, just wait. You know, because there's a difference. It's like wanting to realize yourself and be enlightened. Just wait, right? There's the wanting, there's the desire, there's the idea of it, and then there's the thing itself. And so, and like with many things, as we get more into it, people fall away, right? Because it's challenging work. So I just want to throw out that cautionary tale so that we don't, you know, we, you know, appreciate the importance of this, but don't feel too good about it.
Shosanji, In the morning, I wake up and I offer incense and I do zazen and I do liturgy and I connect with, may all beings be free from suffering. And then I go to work.
Mm-hmm. And you encounter those all beings, or some of them.
Yeah, some of them.
And so what about that?
If I don't follow the teachings of the ancestors to wake up every morning mm-hmm. and offer incense and do zazen, then I can't find myself during the day. Mm-hmm. I lose myself too easily.
And are there people at work that you don't see?
Yeah, definitely.
How do you know? How do you know you don't see them?
I find sometimes there's a trace, or if I look later, I know that I missed something.
And are there people in here that you don't see?
Yeah, definitely. Willfully, sometimes.
Mm. Why? Why willfully? What do you get from that? What's the payoff?
My ego.
Yeah, but that's just a big fat word. Mm-hmm. You know, we can throw these words like a cloak over our shoulders, but what does it mean?
Feels good. Feels like, I know who I am. I'm good. I'm this person. I'm not that. It feels good.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
As long as we don't look too closely, as long as we don't see our impact on ourselves and others, right? And it can also be like a slogan. You know, the self can be like a slogan. You know, like a jingle, that we just rattle it, and it says, you know, this is who I am. I don't have to think about it. You know, this is what I do. I don't have to think about it.
That's why I get up and I sit zazen every morning. Yeah. It doesn't hold together very long.
Yeah. So just remember, you know, that in a sense, in that zazen, you're finding the ground of that mutual affinity. But even then, there's interaction. And once you get off the cushion, there is nothing but interaction. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
Shosanji, after all these years, I started to think that it was easier to come up here, and it's actually getting harder.
Why?
Really harder.
Why?
Because I am more in touch with how much I love you and this life.
Mm-hmm.
And I am shredded by the questions you asked.
Mm-hmm.
They keep me up.
Yeah.
They keep me from eating sometimes. So I want to talk about us here, but I also want to start with the refuge part.
Mm-hmm.
I sent you a video. I don't know if you saw it because it was during session.
I didn't.
It's the video, many people might have seen it, of these two women who were protesting the nomination this week, and they went to Washington, and they had disclosed, I think they were activists, and they had disclosed their sexual assault stories in front of Senator Flake's office earlier in the week. And then when he announced that he was going to vote yes, they the story I read was that they had not planned this. They saw him in the hallway, and they physically intercepted him in an elevator. Mm-hmm. And there's a few-minute video of them speaking wisdom and truth from their bellies mm-hmm. and hearts mm-hmm. and saying, look at me. Mm-hmm. How can you look at me and vote yes? Because you're saying that my story doesn't matter. And, you know, my sort of first thought, reaction of, like, how do I honor the ancestors? How do I take refuge in the Buddha is, like, to be those women, you know, find my heart and my mind and bring it forward. And as I was online, I was feeling like I saw the image of him in the elevator. Yeah. He's looking down. Mm-hmm. He's ashamed. He can't look at them.
Right.
And that's me too. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, there's just so much there. You know, him looking down, what is that?
Well, I was feeling like here with you, in this community where we are working on these issues mm-hmm. of accountability mm-hmm. and power, and where do we misuse it? Mm-hmm. Where do we not see mm-hmm. power? Mm-hmm. That I need to demand of myself the same thing that I'm demanding of you, which is not to be silent. Mm-hmm. And like you said, when it's uncomfortable, you're a teacher, it looks different, you know? Even though I'm asking the same thing, it looks different from me than it does from you. And so when a student takes risks and rocks the boat, it's shocking.
Yeah.
It sounds good, and it doesn't feel good.
Right. No, and it
and
takes...
And I want you to lift us up. Like, please lift us up when we do that.
Yes. I understand. Yes. And the courage... The courage, how much courage there is, but also to in affirming, supporting, nurturing, right? To also be lowering those barriers for those who don't have so much courage. But I want to go back to what you said about staying up at night and not eating. When you've worked on a koan, have they ever kept you up?
Sometimes they wake me up. Uh-huh. I don't fall asleep thinking about them.
No, I didn't mean thinking about them.
Yes,
I mean
yes,
being kept up.
Yes, they've kept me up.
Being kept up. Yes. I mean, bodhicitta keeps you up at night when it's alive. And so, but what do you do with that? What do you do with that internal turmoil that is seeking resolution?
I mean, I think it's easier when I see it as a koan in that way because I can bring it back to my still practice
okay.
after I've been active. When it comes into the realm where I know it's human and relational, it's hard to sit down.
Okay. Well, you mean it's hard to sit down within you, just with yourself?
With myself and... Yeah, with myself.
Okay. Well, so...
And with this community.
Uh-huh. So then the koan just changes shape. In other words, what we're learning, what we need to be learning, let me say it another way. If we're practicing well, we are learning so much. And I don't mean learning in terms of just knowledge. I mean we are experiencing so many things that are all about this. But the thing is, you know, within traditional training, there is a kind of a form that holds you and guides you, you know, and that you can look around and get a sense of how do I move forward, and you can come in and ask questions and be tested and test yourself, and then you go back and then you go back. Once you step out of this, it's not like that. It's free form, right? Or it's formless. And so just like you said, those women probably didn't have a plan. It just, it had to happen, right? And so that's selfless compassion. So how we respond, that's why I didn't want to, you know, get so much into how we respond. Essential though that is, and that's a whole nother conversation we have had and will have, but rather what happens before that, right, as practitioners, because the models, the templates that we're given are, I mean, to put it in Buddhist terms, worldly, which doesn't mean they don't have truth and value and wisdom that we as Buddhists can learn from. And we are, in our own work, we are learning from those models. But Buddhism, as practitioners, we are in the midst of something that's very deep and that is mind training, but it just doesn't provide us with the answer, right? That's the hard part. May your life go on.
Thank you for your teaching.
Shosanchi, issues of power and who has it, who wields it, where I have it and don't see it, where it's become so invisible that it's invisible to us, that it's the water we swim in, and we accept it as just what is rather than something that can be changed, is something I'm grappling with it. Like I don't have, like a, it's something that's very, that I'm struggling with, and trying to see, and especially trying to see that in myself, where I'm not, seeing it, and how I can use that skillfully, and what I try to do is come back to a sense of dignity, like what holds dignity, you know, like how can I recognize that dignity in myself and other people, in other creatures, in creatures that inspire, like cockroaches that inspire disgust in me, like where can I recognize that dignity? And that's just,
Well, you know, there are ways in which we, as I spoke about a few minutes ago, that we can cultivate this. I mean, there's so many practices, and we engage in them. And since every liturgy, every service we do is about generating, you know, these very qualities and extending them, offering them, there are very specific meta practices, you know, practices of the Four Immeasurables, the Divine Abidings, that are very, very obviously about cultivating those qualities. Why? Because we need to. I mean, every teaching exists because we need to hear it. Every practice has been brought forth and continued because we need to engage in that practice. It's not just busy work, right? And so we should, you know, appreciate that. And so the heart of dignity and respect and veneration, all of these great qualities, really is all of it's present within us. The reason it seems absent or becomes diminished or twisted, you know, as Tyler was talking about, where somebody uses a word, but it's not respect. Mm. You know, when I talk about venerating a kind of false altar, that's not veneration and it's not an altar, right? And so, when we release ourselves from our own tyranny, which we have inherited, have been imposed upon us, sometimes violently, and which we have also taken up and become sort of the lead flag holder for. When we, every step along the way, as we are releasing ourselves from those tyrannies and at the same time cultivating, nurturing that compassion, that which you speak of comes. And it's real. It's not contrived. It's you can not really care for someone and feel a deep love for someone, and they're not in conflict with each other. But in actual fact, as that love becomes more and more real, not liking them happens less and less, right? I mean, you can see qualities about them that are offensive, that need to change. You can see actions that they're engaging in that need to be stopped, right? And so in that sense, You know, it's the behavior. And this is, I think, the greatest challenge of all. You know, I was, before the week started, you know, I had a conversation with Jimon because I knew she was going to be watching. Jimon is my partner. I knew she was going to be watching these. And we had been talking a lot about it. I said, look, I'm doing Sesshin. Right? So that's the deal. So, because, you know, I knew when I was coming home, she was going to be like, you know. And so every time, every night I'd come home and I'd look at her and she'd look at me and she would just, you know. But I was thinking about, before, I was really feeling anxious. It was my anxiety, but I was feeling anxious for Dr. Ford and what she would be subjected to. And I don't know, but I was imagining. But I was also thinking about the immense courage, you know, and imagining, you know, the possible responses. And the interesting, you know, in just observing that, who's actually got the power here? In a certain sense, she has very little power. She has one vote. She's sitting in front of a body that has enormous power. But these are powers of roles, right? Powers that invest, that come and go. Well, and they're also invested with, you know, patriarch and male and whiteness and so on. But in terms of spiritual power, who has it? Who's displaying it in those moments? May your life go well.
Thank you. Shosanji.
As you know, the contemporary feminist culture is, I have a lot of mixed feelings about it, you know, and it's made it very hard for me to be here, that this is promoted here.
Mm. Well, what is, but let's look at that. What is, when you say being promoted, in the work that we're doing, what is actually being promoted in terms of what you've experienced, what we're trying to do? How would you say it?
Discussing topics like patriarchy or the Me Too movement, things
right.
like that.
But what are we trying to do in doing that?
Save all beings.
Well, but say without using Buddhist language. What are we trying to do?
Treat people well.
Yeah. Well said. Trying to treat people well. Okay, so now go on.
So to work with this, I've been trying to
Do you think that that's something worthwhile doing?
Yes.
Okay.
To work with this, I've been trying to think things about myself that I didn't think were true.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think of myself as damaged mm-hmm. and oppressed
mm-hmm.
by sexism when mm-hmm. that's not my experience.
Mm-hmm.
So in big and small ways, I've been trying to see that as myself, mm-hmm. as that's who I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you've also, you know, talked to me about your own life, you know, which is personal. I'm not going to bring that out, but you've talked about your own life and seen some of the ways that those things were formed in you, right? In terms of how you, what you're talking about right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. And so, you know, that's so important to realize that we, you know, when we look out and see the world or we hear a word or listen to, be part of a process, you know, our experience is not just ours, right? It's the world's, in a sense, it's our world's experience that we've been influenced by and been impinged upon by and had created karma within, right? And so all of that's coming to bear, and that's really what we're trying to examine, you know? And so that's where, you know, rather than sort of getting, you know, investing a lot in a label, you know, rather like, what actually are we trying to do? You know, even using a word like respect, what do we actually mean? Because when we bring it down to a basic level, it's very basic. And it can help us to sort of sift through some of the things that we may find difficult and get to the thing that we all generally pretty much agree upon. Like, let's treat people well. May your life go
on. Thank you for your teaching.
Then, of course, how do we do that? How do we not do that?
Sho Sanji, I've been really afraid to look at the statue on the altar and felt that, like, if to look it in the eye would be kind of falling for something.
Mm-hmm. You mean like as in being duped?
Yeah, like some trick, some mm-hmm. illusion. Mm-hmm. Kind of mistake it for something it's not.
Good for you. Really?
And this week I did kind of dare to look, and...
How are you doing?
The statue, like, at times I looked just to me like my grandma, or, you know, I was thinking, like, the smaller statues we have now, like, what would, like, if I were to give them names, like, mm-hmm. what would I say? And, like, the names of my friends would come to my mind. Like, mm-hmm. what if I thought of it that way? Mm-hmm. It's, like... people that I knew, people that had cared for me. Mm-hmm. You know, things I really did believe in, not mm-hmm. kind of like ideas I had about, mm-hmm. or how a statue even looks. Like, it kind of bothered me how foreign, how not kind of my ancestors the statues mm-hmm. looked like. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm sort of coming to feel, like, in a bow, that there is a kind of aliveness that I am bowing to. Mm-hmm. But, and something I still don't understand about it, of like, mm-hmm. how is it possible to look at this altar and feel that there is something alive in it? Like, where does that, mm-hmm. where in the statues does that live? Mm.
I would say, based on what you say, that there is aliveness all over the place. I'm looking at it. And what I meant when I said good for you is, it's good to be wary. I mean, you're in this, right? You're here. And so from that place, you know, it's one thing to be standing on the outside 100 miles away, you know, convinced of our own ideas and be wary. That's easy. But to actually, to step in, to come close and have that question, right? Not be too quick, right? To just open that door, right? And for some people, it's not like that. Some people... because of life and karma and background, and for you, that's part of it for you, right? Is why this is a way for you. But that, you know, each of us, if we find a way in, we will find our way in. And I have just as much appreciation, you know, like the monastics. I've watched, you know, over the years, quite a number of people go through that process of discernment. And some people just come in and it's kind of straightforward, straight ahead. Other people, it's kicking and screaming and, you know, but taking each step, and I have so much respect for that, really. You know, people might think it's better to just go through without a scratch. Not necessarily. You know, I mean, both can be completely valid and sincere. But, you know, when it's clear that you are engaged in a process of inquiry, of challenge, where you are demanding, you know, both of yourself and of the tradition, then whatever happens belongs to you, and it is alive. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
So, Sanchi, so there's the... Sorry. There's the taking refuge in the practice as a white male at this time. The taking refuge is Zazen every morning with the Karaniya Metta-Sutta at this time in the verse of the Kesa. And then the practice in the world, living in Kingston, where a lot's going on, a lot of racism and a lot of looking at that, multiple groups working on it. But part of it is being on my porch and being actively in it, and I can feel king. And if an African-American man comes by, and they often do, teenagers and others, I often make a point of, like, saying hi or good morning. A man came by on his bike, and I said, "Hey, how's it going?" And he said, "I was just glad to African-American man wake up this morning."
And so why is it important that we know what color they are?
It's a good question. I think at this time, on this stage, to connect as a human and make a point, there's a person in Sangha who was a man of color who was raised with, his parents kept him away from white people until he was in college in any qualitative way. And when I shared this with him, and he happens to be a big person too, he said, "Just somebody acting in an unafraid way towards an African-American man." Mm-hmm. And to push that, mm-hmm. be challenged by Sangha, by anybody, when I'm going ego about it, when it's about Tom. And then the other practice of being like where I work, mostly white, and somebody turning and saying about somebody being from the ghetto in Kingston, mm-hmm. how do I meet that? Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's active in the moment or other conversations. Mm-hmm. And feeling the broil of history challenging me, because I've been noticing this since my parents had us lock the door when we went through Harlem on the way to New York from Manhattan, from Westchester. Mm-hmm.
Yes, the legacy of fear and violence.
Mm-hmm.
Is here.
Hmm?
Is here and now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
Shosanshi. If I want to realize what the ancestors have brought to us, and if I want to address injustice, I have to see the person, the life, the awareness in front of me, and realize it as myself.
If you turn that towards yourself, right, to realize your self-nature means you have to realize this.
Hi.
Right? What gets in the way?
On my baggage.
Okay. So that which gets in the way is what gets in the way everywhere.
Hi.
For everyone. Towards everyone. And so how do we see what we do not see?
Exactly. I want to see what I don't see.
Where does that begin?
Here.
And with what you just said. I have to. I want to. I vow to. I'm committed to. Without that, it will not happen. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
Well, first of all, thank you, all of you, and particularly those of you who came up. I feel like, in a way, I have very little to add to that. But I'll say a little. I really encourage all of us to reflect on some of these, not just things that we're talking about, but some of these words that we're using today: respect, veneration, sacred, patience, generosity. You know, sometimes we can use words in a way that make us lazy. So we can talk about patience without really having examined for ourselves what is patience. We can talk or think about respect or lack of respect without actually examining what does that mean? What is respect? Right. And there's a danger in that because, one, we don't clarify, and two, that we can use it in ways that are not true. And then just sort of move past. And to see in which, as we examine any of these qualities, which are all human, but are all part of enlightened nature. In other words, all these essentially good qualities are the qualities of an enlightened being. They're all the virtues that we are in the midst of nurturing within ourselves. That's what training is. That's how we learn to treat each other well. And so when we begin to examine one thing, we begin to encounter all of these other qualities, right? Because they're all mutually dependent. We can't be patient without generosity. We can't have respect without intimacy. We can't have veneration without taking refuge. We can't take refuge without quieting the mind. All of these are interdependent. And I think just to leave with humility. You know, I spoke about the other day that so many of the teachings and just the idea of enlightenment, of being free from suffering, of tranquility and serenity and equanimity, they just sound so good, right? Don't you want some of that? Of course. But fundamentally, on the path to these virtues is disruption, right? And that's not just a word. It's a living thing. And when you're in the middle of it, it is not what you want, right? That's generally the view. This is not what I want. I want to be disrupted towards enlightenment, but not like this, right? And in a very real way, that is a test. You know, those moments are tests in a way, not by the universe, but just, we're just meeting. You know, what is this life to me? What kind of life do I want to live? Here it's happening. This is it. What am I nurturing? Right? What do I need to bring forth right now? What is lacking? What do I have to draw upon? You know, several years ago when we, as a community, were going through a very significant disruption and we were at the threshold of an ongo, you know, I threw away the plan and said, let's just take refuge. That's what we're going to do for the next 3 months. May your lives go well.